You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, knowing how to pose in a photograph is hard. For me anyway, but a local photographer will give us some advice and tricks to make it easier to get good pictures at our summer get-togethers. Now, people in Wisconsin will continue to receive additional federal unemployment benefits. Republicans passed a bill last month that would have pulled the state out of that federal program. It was vetoed by Governor Evers. He said that people who lost their jobs during the pandemic needed the extra $300 in assistance. Yesterday, Assembly Republicans attempted to override Evers' veto, but came up short. More than 24 states have already passed legislation to end the enhanced aid ahead of schedule. For everyone else, the program is scheduled to expire in September. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the bonus federal assistance for people who are unemployed? Do you see it as a lifeline for people who lost their jobs during the pandemic? Or do the payments make it too easy to stay unemployed? If you've been out of work, what do those extra $300 a week mean to you? What do you want to see Wisconsin do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll find out what's going on in other states in just a bit. First, let's talk about Wisconsin. Laurel White, it was Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Laurel, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I summed up the saga of this effort to end these benefits in Wisconsin. Can you tell us a little more about what this bill would have done?
So the bill, as you mentioned, would have ended that $300 in additional federal aid for unemployment recipients. It also would have taken some power away from the State Department of Workforce Development to impose work search requirements or waive those work search requirements during the COVID-19 pandemic or related public health emergencies. That's another thing that kind of Republicans and Democrats have clashed about throughout the pandemic.
How much total assistance are out-of-work people in Wisconsin getting when you combine state and federal benefits?
So that's a great question. According to the State Department of Workforce Development, the absolute maximum that you can get in state support in Wisconsin is $370 a week. And that's based on how much money you were making when you were employed. So you have to hit certainly a certain income threshold to get that 370. Folks who make less are going to get less in state support. So the absolute max with the additional 300 from the federal government would be $670 a week.
What did Republicans say about why they wanted to end this program?
Well, this has been a consistent argument from Republicans for at least the past several weeks, if not months. They just say that this money is basically too much, that it's kind of a disincentive for folks to look for work. We actually heard Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reiterating that and kind of alluding to previous federal aid that was even more than the 300 we're seeing now.
A year ago, we'd paid people $1,000 a week not to work, where over half of the folks who collected those benefits earned more not working than they did working. That is a crazy idea.
What do we hear from Democrats in the legislature in response to that argument?
Well, Democrats obviously have been pushing back on that Republican argument. No Democrats joined Republicans in this attempted veto override earlier this week. They have a variety of arguments. They say, you know, there are other barriers to people joining the workforce than additional money from the federal government. They cite things like childcare challenges. Finding care is even more difficult now because some of the changes that, providers went through during the pandemic. They talk about transportation obstacles. They talk about people not being able to find a good fit for them. Maybe they were laid off during the pandemic and they can't find a job that, requires similar skills or abilities. So that's a big part of it. But they do also talk about wages just having been too low in Wisconsin for a long time. You know, our minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. And that was something that Representative Francesca Hong, who represents Madison in the state assembly, talked about on the floor Tuesday.
We have had a low-wage crisis for decades. If people are making more on unemployment, that's on us. That's not on them.
So we had this attempt to override the governor's veto. It fell short. Does that mean, in effect, Laurel, this is a done deal until the federal program, the enhanced benefits, expire in September?
Yeah, essentially that's what that means. So, you know, the state of Wisconsin is going to continue receiving and giving out these benefits for the next month or so. I believe the federal aid expires in early September, like you mentioned. So this was kind of the last line of attack, I guess you could call it, by Republicans who have really opposed this money coming into the state.
Laurel, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Laurel White is WPR's state government reporter. We talked to her about the state assembly's attempt to override Governor Evers' veto of a bill that would have blocked additional federal unemployment aid. The effort failed yesterday, so that unemployment enhancer will continue, as we heard, into September. Some states are planning, though, to cut off this federal assistance ahead of schedule. Some have already done so. Heather Long joins us now, economics correspondent at The Washington Post. Heather, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Heather, as you just heard, here in Wisconsin, it looks like these benefits will ride out until the original end date. What are we seeing around the country?
Well, there's certainly been an aggressive push around the country to roll these benefits back early in particularly Republican-led states. So in June, we saw 20 states, all with Republican governors, who cut those federal benefits. So that extra $300 you were talking about is no longer in place in those states. Basically, that cuts the funding in half for most unemployed people, where the average was about $600 with the extra money. Now the average is about $300 a week. The other key one, though, that people forget in this discussion is many states also rolled back the unemployment aid for gig workers and the self-employed, and that means they get nothing now. So that's where the people who tend to be hurt the most by this policy.
For that $300 enhancer, you wrote in a recent piece that economists are looking at this and seeing kind of a natural experiment. Some states still have the enhanced benefits, some don't. And the big question is, does that affect hiring? When you cut those benefits, do people go back to work? We're a lot to untangle there, but what do we know so far?
Here's what we know so far, and the key emphasis is obviously so far. These new policies have only been in place for a few weeks. Two things are standing out so far from the data. Number one is there has not been a huge hiring boom in those states that have rolled it back so far. But, and what's interesting, what we wrote about, early data suggests an interesting trend happening in those states. The ones like Missouri that did roll that money back in June, they are seeing more hiring of people in over 25. So these are workers in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s. So more experienced workers do appear to be coming back into the labor force. At the same time, though, hiring was dropping for teenagers in those states. So basically, what happened is more hiring of experienced workers, less hiring of teenagers. So that's why overall you aren't seeing, you know, some big hiring boom, but you are seeing a difference in who's getting hired after this policy change.
And part of that is, if I'm reading your piece right, because of how teenagers go into the unemployment system. If I'm a teen, I haven't worked a lot, I'm not necessarily eligible for any or all of available unemployment compensation. Is that right?
That's right. And that's why we've seen this teen hiring boom across the country this summer. The teen unemployment rate is at the lowest level since about the 1950s. It's been this huge surge across the nation in teens going to work. And I interviewed a bunch of restaurant owners who said, you know, I used to never even look at anybody who was under age 18, and I preferred them to be 21 or up, particularly if it's a restaurant that involves alcohol. But they said, you know, this summer, I couldn't find the workers I needed. I gave some of these 15, 16, 17-year-olds a chance, and generally they've turned out to be great workers. The problem, of course, is as fall school starts again and they have to go back, they generally have to reduce their hours. So that's making a lot of restaurants and other businesses nervous again.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Andrew is with us in Whitewater. Andrew, hi.
Hi. I just had a quick comment regarding the unemployment benefits in combination with the child tax credit and other programs that the federal government's doing right now. Firstly, I think that adding the extra funds that people can get on a weekly basis is definitely hindering hiring. I'm in manufacturing, and we're trying to outsource our hiring to staffing agencies because we're having trouble filling positions, and they too are seeing issues with it. Secondly, if you've got this additional child tax credit where people have children at home, they can get an additional, I want to say it's $300 a week or a month. I may be mixing that up. You've got all this additional money. It might make people feel good at the moment. The problem is going to be, as long as the Federal Reserve is continuing to print money and run up the national debt, it might feel good right now to have that extra cash coming in, but when people realize that the value of the dollar has been totally debased and they can't buy anything with that dollar, that's when everything is going to really hit hard, and that's what people need to be aware of, is the massive wave of inflation that's going to come up here shortly.
Andrew, thanks a lot for calling. Couple big points there, Heather. First of all, Andrew's saying his workplace having a hard time finding employees. Whatever the reason for that is, that's a pretty common story, right? We're seeing a lot of businesses, especially some of the restaurants you talk to, having trouble finding workers. Is Andrew seeing something that's out there?
Yeah, obviously, this is definitely a massive issue in the United States right now. We have a record number of job openings, and we have almost as many unemployed people, but getting people into those jobs has been a challenge right now. I would point out, though, I speak to unemployed people pretty much every day and have for the past year and a half, and I would say the fairest way to say it is this. Are the unemployment benefits impacting a little bit? Are a factor? Yes, they are. And you heard the Fed Chair Jerome Powell say that today. But are they the biggest factor going on right now? Are they the pivotal factor? The answer to that is no. And, obviously there have been concerns about health and childcare, but the biggest one of all is people want flexibility. And if you look at the two industries having the hardest time hiring, it is manufacturing, like Andrew said, and restaurants. What is the key with those two? You can't do it from home. You have to be standing there in the factory or in the restaurant for hours upon hours. And a lot of people are not eager to return to that kind of work right now.
Thanks a lot for that call, Andrew. We're taking a look at states that have blocked enhanced federal unemployment boosts to their payments with Heather Long, economics correspondent at The Washington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see these boosts to federal assistance come to an end, or do you want to see them go at least till the deadline in September? Have you relied on, or do you still rely on, the additional unemployment aid? Do you think it's a disincentive to work? If you are in a place where you have to hire people, what are you seeing? What's working? What's not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk on additional federal unemployment benefits. Some states have ended those benefits ahead of schedule. Washington Post economics correspondent Heather Long stays with us, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this boost in unemployment compensation? Do you think it's helping people who need it, or do you see it as a big disincentive to work, a little of both? Have you used it yourself? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Karen is with us in Osseo. Karen, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Karen?
Well, I have been in and out of unemployment for the last 20 years because of my job situation. But I can guarantee that if the minimum wage is at $7.25, those people are not getting $370 a week from unemployment benefits. This is pushing the minimum wage to be higher, which I think is great, because no one can live on that, obviously. The other concern that I have is for my husband is self-employed, so he's on the PUA, and that's a totally different formula. So even though he makes $50 an hour and makes quite a bit of money a year, he gets $167 a week for unemployment, before the $300. So it doesn't always benefit everybody.
Karen, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. Heather, first of all, Karen saying, hey, maybe this is putting pressure on wages, whether to officially increase the minimum wage or it'll drive wages up. And you wrote about that recently, I think, Heather, about maybe wages going up in the country.
They are definitely going up, no doubt about it, across the board. It's been the past 3 months have seen some of the fastest wage growth since the early 1980s. It's been particularly high in, not surprisingly, the restaurant and hospitality sector, as they have the most job openings right now, and they have struggled the most to get workers back. They have obviously had, it's hard to find a restaurant that hasn't raised their pay or done a signing bonus or a referral bonus or something like this right now. And, I think it's such a, the caller, she brings such a good point that it's a really hard call for, if you're a governor right now, we've seen two things in the data so far when states roll back this unemployment money. You know, number one, a handful of more experienced workers come back in, particularly in the hospitality sector, and maybe that's something that you want to see. But at the flip side, you also see a lot more people reporting hardship paying bills. So you don't want to just cut people off overnight and have them unable to feed their families again. And so, you know, in the ideal world, you would do some sort of policy where it gradually rolls off. Okay, it's the $300 this week and next week, then it'll be $200 the first few weeks in August, and then it'll be $100 the last few weeks in August, and by September it'll be gone. So you're sort of telegraphing to people. But unfortunately, in this highly polarized climate we live in, it's sort of all or nothing right now.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Heather Long, economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Let's go back to your calls now. Mike is with us in St. Lawrence. Mike, hi.
Hey, guys. My question or comment is that I thought the child care tax credit was already in force. It was just an annual thing instead of a monthly benefit. And I just wanted clarification on that. I don't know if they raised it. Or if it, of course, the tax time, it depends on your income and whether you get a bonus, whether you get a check or whether you get it cut off your taxes. But I was just curious about that.
Mike, thanks for the call. Mike's referring to that new child tax credit. It is coming out, I believe, monthly. Heather, we've done segments on this. Correct me if I'm wrong. And this applies to a lot more people than the longer running child tax credit that our caller was referring to. Do I have that about right?
Yeah, you do. And just to clarify what he was asking, the amount did go up. So before, the maximum credit, which was changed in the 2017 Republican law, was $2,000, you know, per child for families up to, it's about $150,000 a year. Now that the credit has been expanded. So depending upon the age of the child, it could be worth $3,000 or even $3,500. So it's gone up. And as you were just saying, more families, particularly more low-income families, are now eligible for that full $3,000 amount because the tax credit is fully refundable. So that's why somebody is getting these checks for $250 a month per child for age 6 to 17 or $300 a month for, you know, children under six.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to John in Madeleine Island. John, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to bring up that I collect unemployment all this past spring and last year, and it has helped me immensely. Now, there are times when there's people that, when you collect unemployment, you have to go out and look for work if you are not working. So to say that people are just sitting around collecting this unemployment, that's kind of false. So even if you are working reduced hours, but you're still working. But if you're not working, you have to go out and look for work, at least 4 jobs a week. And it has to be provable that you did look for that work.
John, thanks a lot for that call. And Heather, you can't quit your job, I think, and get unemployment. You have to do job searches, though there have been waivers during the pandemic, some because of this. But it's not as easy as some people think. I think our caller is saying to collect unemployment. Do you want to talk about that?
Yep, exactly right what you've just said. And many, almost all states have now put back on that job search requirement that he was speaking about, where you it depends by state, but you have to show that you have searched or at least submitted applications, usually on one of these job sites like an Indeed.com or LinkedIn or something. And I will say, if you talk to recruiters, they will say sometimes they see a ghost, they call them ghost applications, where people are submitting applications, then when they call or text or email the person back, sometimes they won't, you know, they won't respond, or they'll say that I'm not actually interested in this job. So that, you know, that's where it's you get some of this imperfect situation where, again, can I find you someone who is staying on the sidelines and not working right now because of unemployment payments? Yes, I can. Is that the story for the bulk of Americans who are unemployed right now? No, I don't believe it is, from the data or the anecdotes. These other issues are definitely playing a huge role, including the biggest one of all. I wrote a column about it back in May that got millions of page views, really resonated with people. I called it the great reassessment of work in America. You know, this past year changed so many people, changed what you value in life, what you want to do with your life. And no, people are not rushing back to those retail or those lower end, some of the lower end restaurant jobs, because they want to try something different. And yes, the unemployment and the child tax credit is giving people a little bit more of a cushion to see if they can jump to what they hope is a better life career for them.
And I think we talked to you about that back in May. Heather, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks a lot.
That's Heather Long, economics correspondent at The Washington Post. We talked to her today about what's going on in states that blocked additional federal unemployment aid. Earlier, we talked to WPR state government reporter Laurel White about Governor Reaver's recent veto of a bill that would stop that assistance ahead of schedule. Assembly Republicans tried to override that veto yesterday, but came up short. Coming up, we talked to a local photographer about how to pose in photographs and look good doing it. Easier said than done, for some of us. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. How's your garden doing this year? We'll give you a chance to brag about your veggies or flowers, or if everything looks pathetic, you can commiserate. Some garden gossip coming up. Now, summer is a time for family get-togethers, holiday celebrations, spending time with friends, and something many of us try to do when we get together is take pictures. For some of you, posing for a picture may come naturally, but I know posing for a picture is a skill because I don't have that skill. Marla Berg is a portrait and product photographer in Madison and Chicago. She owns and operates a photo studio in downtown Madison. I talked with her last month about what we can do to look good in front of the camera. All right, I got to know, does it seem to you as a pro, like some people are just more natural at posing in photographs than others?
You know, I would say yes. Some people are a little less inhibited, so they are more likely to be kind of extroverted and go with it. And other people a little more reserved and are looking at the camera as like an enemy. So it can go either way.
Now think about the worst person who's ever posed for you, and then subtract some and you got me. How would you advise those people in my category to, I don't know, just to relax and feel a little more natural, first of all?
Well, okay. So I don't think you're as bad as you think you are. And that is probably the problem is you're more than likely in your head and you need time to warm up to the camera. So that can be with a photographer, that can be with a friend, that could be with an iPhone session. You need to find a way to warm up to the camera and warm up to the photographer. And if you don't have that time, I would suggest you practice in the mirror. Just kind of casually at home, just practice posing.
And that, I don't know, does that work? Because, you know, the mirror has that reverse image thing. I feel like I look different in photos versus mirrors. Does that really help?
It does help because you're not really looking for what you will look like. You're kind of trying to hone in on how you want to feel. And that is what translates through the photo. So the mirror practice just kind of gets you used to, you know, putting foot on one, you know, weight on one foot or turning to the side, learning what your best side is. Maybe you don't like your nose when, you know, you're looking up. So learning how you feel in the mirror will help you in front of the camera, because then you can kind of guide the person and say, you know, don't shoot at that angle, or give me a second. I got to turn this way.
Now, for a posed picture, some people have that natural smile. Some people have that really forced smile. How can we make ourselves smile naturally?
Well, there's two ways you can approach this. If you're working with a non-professional, so amateur, or just a family member, what I would do is I would just have a conversation and then just talk it through and find a way to laugh. Or fake laugh. If you fake laugh or you know, genuinely laugh, you'll get some sort of smile that's close to reality. When someone tells you to say cheese or tells you to smile, it conjures up an instruction that you have to do something, and it looks really forced. So I would say have a conversation, or if you're working with a pro, what I would do is, as a pro, I would actually just have you move around and talk and laugh, and I'll photograph the in-between moments. So I'll get the in-between smiles, the ones that are really genuine and not the ones that you're forcing.
Talking to Marla Berg, a photographer in Madison and Chicago. She has a studio in downtown Madison. She's sharing advice on posing for all those pictures maybe we're going to be taking as we get back together with friends and family this summer. All right, a big question. When I'm doing photos or when I've been on film for our friends at Wisconsin Public Television, I forget what humans do with their hands. What do we do with our hands when we're getting pictures taken?
So that is probably the number one thing that I hear when I'm with the subject. The easiest answer to that is absolutely nothing. So you can just let your hands fall to their sides and use your body to kind of accentuate or, you know, make your arms and hands look good. And what I mean is, if you just if you stood up right now and just, you know, stood where you were and your hands fell by their sides, if you put weight on one foot or angled your body in a certain way, your hands will flow. Your elbow might, you know, tilt a little bit. So just kind of let them fall. If letting them fall still feels a bit awkward or unnatural, then I would say go for the pockets. If you're wearing jeans, don't stuff them in the pocket. Maybe just put your thumb in the pocket. Never hide your hands. Never tuck them behind your body. Don't do anything that's too forced. But the easiest answer is let them fall. You could probably watch any actor in any movie and kind of see what they do. And they're letting them fall as well. So it just takes a little bit of practice.
Any advice for getting photos of kids who we might have a hard time getting to pose? So this is advice for the photographers here, I guess, for taking pictures of kids.
Yeah. So kids are my main focus in a lot of my portrait work. And I can tell you, if you're shooting a young kid, or, you know, maybe even an adolescent, so someone who's less than 5 feet tall, assuming that you're, you know, around 5 feet or taller, you want to get down to their level. So let's say it's a toddler. You don't want to hold the camera above their heads where you're looking down at them. So this is where you're going to want to squat or kneel or get on the knee. And your lens should be at their head or eye level. The picture looks more natural and in perspective as opposed to being over them. And the other thing I would suggest is don't guide them too much on posing. You may be able to give them direction like lay on your tummy or across your legs. But I tend to not say sit here, stand here, say cheese. I let them be who they are in their natural state. And I just kind of capture the moment.
And just our last few moments, a big group. How do we make sure we get everybody when they're not blinking?
The trick to that is a photographer trick. You just keep shooting a bunch of pictures. So you're going to get some blinkers. Actually, I think there's like a genetic thing with, you know, humans where some just are going to blink more than others. So you got a large group. What I would do is, whether you're using an iPhone or a DSLR, rapid fire, keep shooting. you're going to get something that's good. And if you really have the time, you can probably swap out a few eyes and heads and Photoshop at a later date.
Marla, thanks for the advice. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Marla Berg is a photographer in Madison and Chicago. She talked to us last month about how to pose for pictures at our next get-together and hope to turn out that they look good. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look at the model minority myth.
Over the last year, the global pandemic has helped amplify historic racial tensions within the U.S. This includes ongoing racial struggles the Asian American community has experienced for quite some time. Maisy Vang of Sun Prairie has been thinking back on these experiences in her own life.
The model minority myth depicts Asian Americans as characteristically successful and less troublesome than other minority groups. Before the COVID pandemic, this stereotype has allowed the racial targeting of Asian Americans in the past to be essentially overlooked. Hmong Americans have a unique story. Not only have our anti-Asian encounters been unnoticed, but being lumped in a race that is inherently successful has caused other issues to be ignored as well. My earliest recollection of not having similar advantages or privileges than that of my fellow Asian Americans goes back to the third grade. My siblings and I were living what we believed were typical childhoods in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, walking home from school, being latchkey kids, and trying to keep out of trouble while my parents worked rotating in overnight shifts at packaging and paper mill jobs. But while I played on train tracks and explored abandoned train stations and warehouse buildings, my Japanese American classmate received private cello lessons and studied classical music. I also had an Indian American classmate who received solid academic and career guidance very early on in life. She knew exactly what she wanted to be when she grew up for as long as she could remember, a medical doctor. While most children at some point in time want to become a doctor, this friend knew what specific steps she needed to take, what subjects she needed to study, and to what colleges she wanted to apply. I moved away shortly after, but our paths crossed again when I was a senior at UW-Madison. I learned my old friend indeed was still on that career path, with plans to attend medical school in the fall. It's extremely rare for a child that young to carry through with such detailed plans, but the fact was that she actually had plans, a strategy, and was aware of opportunities before her. I didn't know there was postgraduate education until much later in life, and even then, schooling beyond a four-year degree was unimaginable. I can't help but think how different it was for the Hmong to be included in a race in which we didn't have the comparable advantages, skills, and education. The Hmong is an ethnic group from Southeast Asia with no country or nationality. We didn't have a written language until the second half of the 20th century. We were persecuted throughout history and repeatedly forced to migrate. It was only our participation in the CIA's secret war during the Vietnam conflict that we were granted refuge in the U.S. I seemingly speak of first world problems, complaining about not receiving private music lessons or professional career guidance, but when I really look back, we oftentimes were not provided some essential social services presented to other minority groups. Hmong children and parents were rarely considered for English language support classes. We didn't have sufficient guidance to help assimilate into our communities, to ensure basic needs were met, or that racism was addressed. I participated in numerous African American awareness and appreciation events, and I brought home bilingual Spanish pamphlets, but my Hmong parents were never able to fully comprehend the communications given to them or know what was really happening in their children's social or academic lives. Despite these circumstances, Hmong Americans have come far in our few decades in America. We have fulfilled American dreams. But just like the model minority stereotype not applying to all Asian Americans, not every Hmong experience is the same. And addressing the uniqueness of each minority group or individual can help dispel myths so that we can better understand each other and help each other reach our full potentials.
Maisy Vang is a writer who lives in Sun Prairie. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, we want to hear how your garden is doing this summer. Your veggies, flowers, and other plants, are they doing pretty well, or have you thrown in the towel? What do you have planted? What are you most excited about? What's your secret to making them grow well? Have plans to can some produce? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your personal garden report. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. That's coming up next here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, stories about gun violence often feature areas with high murder rates. Jen White looks at the lessons from a community where gun violence is not extreme, but it is persistent. Find out more today at 6 on 1A+. Now we're just about ready to roll into August, so if you've got tomato plants, you're probably getting eager for them to ripen. Maybe you've already enjoyed some of the fruits of your labor. Zucchini, eggplant, cucumber, beans, to name a few. Or maybe you've got a nice display of flowers and other plants around your home. Or maybe you've given up and let the weeds take over. Either way, we want to hear from it. Brag about your garden or share your sad story at 800-642-1234. No judgment. What do you have in the ground or in containers? Any particular fruit or veggie that's really coming along nicely? A great flower patch? What do you have most excited that you're most excited about this year? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm doing pretty well in my tiny garden patch, as I've mentioned, partly because we got rid of this, I realize now, this tree that had to go and it was shading out that area. So, I mean, it's kind of an obvious improvement there. Morning show producer Stephen Potter said his cabbage, looking awfully sad. He sent along a picture. Yeah, it doesn't look great. Sorry, Stephen. Jennifer Dargan from the Educational Communications Board says, I have to admit I'm a terrible gardener, but love to pick up bulk tomatillos from the farmer's market that other people have grown and make a winter's worth of salsa. How about you? Join in at 800-642-1234. You are your own garden correspondent on Central Time. Let's go to your calls now. Jay is with us in Madison. Jay, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you got going on, Jay?
I've got about a 30 by 30 garden in DeForest, kind of right on the main street. And I've always had a lot of success. One thing weird this year was that my onions all died off.
Huh.
But recently, I try to do something different every year. This year, I put in some hop poles, and I got hops crawling all over the place, and my raspberries are taking off. I had a question for the, I guess, listeners or whoever, has anyone experimented with cover crops in a garden just to keep the weeds down?
Oh, interesting. Well, I got a question for you, though, Jay, before you go. You're growing hops.
Yep.
What are you going to do with them hops?
I am. Well, maybe I'll have to start a new hobby this winter, brewing some beer.
I guess I could have guessed. That's what people mostly do with hops. Jay, thanks so much for getting us started at 800-642-1234. We asked around the offices here. Allison Tyler, membership services manager, says, my zucchinis are massive. I went away for a particularly humid weekend. When I came back, I had six zucchinis ready to be harvested, all weighing over 5 pounds each. I hope my family, Allison says, enjoys zucchini bread. That's a common story. I know if I've done an August vacation, you come back and there's baseball bats growing in the garden. What about you? What's your garden looking like this year? 800-642-1234 is the number to call with your report. Let's go back to your calls now. Annette is with us in Milwaukee. Annette, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us? How's your garden doing, Annette?
It's doing. So I got a raised planter. This is my first year gardening. Hmm. Because I have a yard and I have a raised planter and we just made a garden bed. But I was just calling because you can like read about gardening and it gets very overwhelming. So I just tried kind of trial and error, and my green beans turned out great and I've been eating them and they're awesome. So I'm just going to learn from what I'm doing.
Now, I tried green beans a couple years and I think rabbits or something. I mean, rabbits are a big problem in my yard. You didn't have any, you know, predatory hordes of rabbits going after your beans, Annette?
I have a lot of rabbits, but they were in my raised garden bed, like it's high off the ground,
okay.
So they kept them away. So they were okay with me.
And you built this bed yourself, the raised bed yourself?
No, I just picked one up from Menards. It's pretty small, and I put a bunch of cucumbers in it too, which like totally took over. And the carrots didn't turn out because of the shade, but I learned from it. And next year I'll probably just do like beans in there and then maybe a different thing on the other side. But
that's awesome, Annette. Well, I'm glad you're getting some good results. Thank you so much for calling in with your garden report at 800-642-1234. Asking around the studios here, Larry Mueller of the Larry Mueller Show says, I don't know much about gardening. He actually said, my tomatoes are doing great. I'm eating lots of BLTs these days. I've had only a few little problems with disease so far this year. Of course, you can listen to Garden Talk every Friday on the Larry Mueller Show. Check it out. You'll get lots of great advice from Larry, his guests, and other listeners as well. And you can call in with your garden report at 800-642-1234. Christina in Sauk City had an answer to a question about cover crops. She says she just started doing them in her garden. A helpful website is Midwest Cover Crop. Great, that's easy. Look up Midwest Cover Crop if you want cover crops in your Midwest garden. Makes sense to me. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Valerie is on the line in Janesville. Valerie, hi.
Hi, how is it going?
Good. What do you got growing, Valerie?
Well, we took a shift from our perennials and, you know, just the yardscaping accessories. With the drought, we ended up planting a lot of silks throughout the entire yard. It looks gorgeous and healthy, and they were each like $1.99 from a local resale store.
No, that's, you said silk, like as in fake flowers. Do I have that?
I don't. Yes.
But it looks great.
It looks really good.
Okay.
And we're regardless, that's how we're weathering the drought.
I love it. They're drought resistant.
Year.
You don't need to water. You just got a weed around them, I guess, right? Or are you getting silk weeds coming up?
we do have some little invasives, and that's acceptable. Some of those are going into pots, and we're seeing how they develop.
Fantastic, Valerie. I love it. I love the image. That's great. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Jason Butler, a key figure here at WPR, says, man, I've done nothing with my little flower garden, and I'm all out of ideas. The landscaper's mowed over a planting. I haven't weeded or mulched. It's out of control. Biggest bummer, haven't seen any monarch caterpillars in my milkweed this year. But that said, the great thing about perennials is they come up whether you want them to or not. And Jason loves the bees going crazy on them. Yeah, I've been letting milkweed grow, and I don't know. I've seen butterflies flying around. I got to look closely, see if there's any caterpillars on their way. Back to your calls now. Diane is on the line in Montfort. Diane, hi. Are you there, Diane? I don't hear Diane there. Sounded like a line. Diane says, I did some tomatoes in cloth bags, our producer says, others in straw bales. Well, I hope those are coming out okay. Diane, thanks for letting us know about that. Molly Stentz, interim assistant talk director, says, I think it's going to be a really good year for peppers, given how hot and dry it has been. Peppers love that. Me, not so much. Also looking for solutions to cucumber beetles. That's also safe to use around pollinators. Taking your garden vegetable and flower and silk flower reports right now at 800-642-1234. I personally have now eaten my little mini eggplants, a couple of them, my yellow summer squash. I've eaten some kale, eaten some. Wait, there's one more thing. Cucumbers. So I've eaten everything I planted this year, which has never happened before. Time for one more caller. I think Robin is with us in Onalaska. Robin, hi.
Hi. Well, I have a sad story.
Oh, no.
I've had gardens with lots of success, but I've always had dogs, and they kept the deer away. Last couple of years, I don't have a dog and tried every remedy there is, but we just can't fend off the deer. And so many times I've transplanted my strawberries, and they're looking really good, and come back, they've come in one night and mowed it all down.
Oh, no.
And that's happened with everything. So I'm giving up.
Robin.
I'm giving up until I get a dog.
Robin, I'm sorry to hear that, but I think I could promise you are not the only person in Wisconsin with a story like that this year or any year. Okay, time for one more caller. Zach is with us in Milwaukee. Zach, hi.
Hey, I'm trying artichokes this year, which is the first time I've tried that, and it's been pretty successful.
All right, you've eaten some already, Zach?
I have.
And how do you cook them?
We boil them up. They're actually pretty small, so you boil them up, and then you take off most of the outer leaves. Sure. They're almost too small to eat, and they actually have really sharp spines on them, so you kind of got to watch out.
Awesome.
But the parts are really good.
Zach, thanks so much for sharing that success story. Thanks to everybody who called in. You can keep emailing your garden stories, ideas@WPR.org. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show. Tomorrow, a court ruling has raised a lot of questions for people with DACA protections. We'll get the latest on that development. That's tomorrow at 8 on the morning show. Up next, it's our look at some of the top stories in national politics. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.